bilingual or promote bilingualism in Canada? Look.
There is this thing going on.
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Hi, welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is CKUT on 90.3 FM, broadcasting live from Montreal. My name is Amy Lloyd.
And I'm Maya Ibbotson.
Today we broadcast from the Kyokyage, the traditional territory of Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe Nations. Currently, Maya and I are isolated in Toronto from each other, so we are recording in separate spheres, but on Zoom. So that's why we sound like we're together, but we're not.
So happy New Year to everyone listening. Thank you for joining us for our first show of 2021. Hopefully this year will be better than the last, and this week we will be discussing updates on the vaccine thus far, as well as an audio essay that aims to explore the rise of anti-vaxxers within the alt-right movement and Republican Party, especially in the US. We're excited to be back on air and hope you enjoy our understanding of and research on anti-vax politics. We want to issue a content warning as this segment does discuss anti-Semitism. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a short break.
Thank you.
That was The Wombats with Greek Tragedy Jukebox Remix, followed by Winona Forever with Shrek Chic. Now for our weekly headline roundup. As COVID-19 vaccines begin to be administered across Canada, it pleases me to say that Indigenous communities across the country are being prioritized for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, right behind healthcare workers and long-term facility residents. In their first phase of vaccination rollouts, Canadian provinces have prioritized Indigenous peoples who are assumed to be at high risk for contracting the coronavirus, especially due to the remote location of many Indigenous communities. Inequities in infrastructure and healthcare have left Indigenous people more vulnerable to the effects of the pandemic. take into account the Manitoba Indigenous Canadian population, for example, who have seen disproportionate COVID contraction and death rates in comparison to the rest of the province's population since September. However, prior to New Year's, the Manitoba provincial government announced that they would be sending 5,300 of their 7,300 Moderna vaccine doses to Indigenous communities in the province. They also announced on New Year's that they would be receiving 9,600 additional doses of the Moderna vaccine before March, reserved for priority at-risk communities. For remote Indigenous Canadian peoples, provincial governments are opting to use the Moderna vaccine, which is easily stored at negative 20 degrees Celsius, opposed to the Pfizer vaccine, which has extreme refrigeration requirements. So the Moderna vaccine is more durable and is therefore likely or more likely to survive the transportation to these remote reserves.
According to the Montreal Gazette, quote, as Quebec reported 7,663 new COVID-19 cases in the past 3 days on Sunday, two specialists in public health and infectious diseases called on the government to ramp up vaccinations and extend the current lockdown beyond January 11th, unquote. Catherine Hankins, co-chair of the COVID-19 Immunity Task Force, as well as a professor of public health at McGill University, issued a statement saying, quote, I feel that we're really in a race against time now, unquote. Furthermore, the new variant of COVID-19 that originated in the UK and is considered more contagious has reached Quebec. Marina Klein, a professor of medicine at McGill, urged us to take the second variant seriously. Similar to the beginning of this lockdown reality, we must once again prioritize social distancing to effectively slow the spread of this new variant of COVID-19. And for those who don't know, it's been reported that this variant is mask wearing is not effective for this new strain because it is a lot more contagious. It said that the vaccine will work for this new strain, but that means we've got to, you know, prioritize masks and not, yeah. Just because the vaccine's on its way doesn't mean we can, you know, be more.
We still got some time.
Yeah, we still have some time. So to quote Professor Klein, my prediction is that these numbers will continue to go up. The health system is already reaching a critical point with the prediction that hospitals will be overwhelmed within 3 weeks if there's no action taken, unquote. According to Professor Hankins, Canada is quote unquote lagging behind in regards to rolling out vaccines. As published by the Montreal Gazette, quote, in Quebec, the vaccination rate is 0.34%, while it is at 0.26% in Ontario, according to the COVID-19 Tracker Canada, unquote. But obviously, these are early days, so we'll see.
We've still got some time. Yeah. Pray for the best. Okay, so although this, or my headline here, is American news, I felt like addressing it because it's not getting a lot of coverage. We'll get to that later. But on December 25th, 2020, a 63-year-old suicide bomber named Anthony Quinn Warner detonated a recreational vehicle bomb in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, injuring 8 people and damaging more than 40 buildings. According to CNN, right before the explosion, Warner's RV broadcast strange, ominous warnings in a computerized female voice that the RV would soon explode, which allowed for police and nearby civilians to evacuate the area and limit the casualties. Thankfully, there were no deaths beside the suicide bomber himself, as the nature of suicide bombing is. Interestingly enough, CNN also reports that the police had previously been warned that Warner had been building bombs as of July 2019 by a woman who called into the Nashville police station, who reported herself as his girlfriend. An officer observed Warner's home for days after this initial report and found no activity suggesting he was making the bombs. Obviously, they were eventually proven wrong. Besides this, Warner's acquaintances have little descriptors for him, besides being, quote, generally a loner and a computer expert, unquote. What I found interesting about the story is not only its lackluster coverage in mainstream media, but that the authorities are clearly hesitant to call it an act of terrorism, which, again, according to CNN, is defined as an act in furtherance of a political goal, which is also an interesting definition. In my opinion, there is definitely some racial motivations in reporting coverage, as Warner was a white American man. I feel like that's notable, but more developments on the story are soon to come, I'm sure.
As reported by APTN News, an open letter written by the Wet'suwet'en Eten female chiefs is being widely supported by 400 healthcare workers in BC. This letter calls on government officials to, quote, close work camps, unquote, during the pandemic in the province. This letter specifically addresses Dr. Bonnie Harry, the provincial health officer in BC. The letter was published on the beginning of December 2020 and has been signed by more than 650 people. So on top of the letter written by the four female chiefs, more people started writing open letters to Dr. Bonnie Henry. One of the letters says that, quote, on the widespread and deadly racism and discrimination experienced by Indigenous people in the healthcare system in BC, as health professionals working on the front lines, we see firsthand the brunt of devastation caused to communities by the dual public health emergencies of the climate crisis and COVID-19 pandemic, which both disproportionately impact Indigenous communities, unquote. UBCIC Chief Stuart Phillip, Chief Don Tom, and Kikpai 7 Judy Wilson wrote in support of the original letter and its author, stating that, quote, the work camps on Wet'suwet'en territory house over 700 people and stand to become a hotbed of COVID-19 transmission that will endanger precious lives, including elders, knowledge keepers, skyzy children, and upcoming chiefs. Should oil and gas projects be allowed to continue without respecting the welfare and authority of First Nations peoples, unquote. Since gas and oil is evidently not an essential service, people should not be forced to work for said companies. These companies include coastal gas link facilities. That was our weekly headline roundup. Please stay tuned for some songs and then our segment.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. That was Jars of It by Steve Lacy, followed by The Airfields with Saint Monday.
So now it's time for our audio essay. As mentioned earlier, this week we're doing an overview of vaccine updates, debunking myths, and exploring the rise of anti-vaxxers within the alt-right as well as Republican Party. This overall explanation hopes to shed light on this emerging new concept of anti-vax politics, although obviously these two have been separate and existed for a while. Once again, we want to issue a content warning as this segment does discuss anti-Semitism, and we hope you enjoy.
In what feels like forever, but was in actuality a relatively short 9 months ago, the World Health Organization declared the novel COVID-19 virus a global pandemic. After 85 million cases and 1 million deaths worldwide since this initial declaration, we've got the first COVID-19 vaccines administered in Canada, signaling hope on the horizon of normalcy. What happened between March of 2020 and now, and what exactly is to come, let's go observe. Let's go talk about it. Let's go discuss, okay?
Okay, so, well,
Maya, what do you have for us?
Yeah. Well, obviously, as any virus goes, a vaccine, as many know, is what allows for immunity amongst the general population. So a vaccine, once administered amongst a lot of people, lowers the chances of contraction and spreading. So in March, everyone is waiting for this vaccine to come out. However, the process to create a vaccine is normally a long one. It takes years. The quickest vaccine to ever be created was the one for mumps, which took 4 years, according to UCLA, their health center website. So the situation was looking pretty dire statistically, but governments and labs around the world were working on this vaccine. Obviously, this became a bit of a political nationalist thing, but there's no need to get into that here. We'll talk about it later. Finally, on November 9th, 2020, Pfizer made its grand announcement on its website.
So the pharmaceutical company, alongside BioNTech, a German biotechnology company, stated that their new mRNA-based vaccine candidate has, quote, demonstrated evidence of efficacy against COVID-19 in participants without prior evidence of COVID infection, based on their first interim efficacy analysis conducted on November 8th, 2020, by an external independent data monitoring committee, also known as DMC, from the phase 3 clinical study, unquote. So the Pfizer trial recruited upwards of 40,000 participants for their study. This November 9th, 2020 announcement was reporting their phase 3 findings, meaning the vaccine was almost done. Again, according to its website, quote, the Pfizer vaccine submission for emergency use authorization to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, also known as the FDA, is planned for soon after the required safety milestone is achieved, which is currently expected to occur in the third week of November. Clinical trial to continue through the final analysis at 164 confirmed cases is ordered to collect further data and characterize the vaccine candidate's performance against other studies endpoints. Against other study endpoints, unquote.
So right after this, on November 16th, Moderna, which is another American pharmaceutical company, announced their COVID-19 vaccine candidate, which held a 94.5% success rate in preventing COVID during their phase 3 trial. So at this point, we've got two vaccine candidates. Lucky for most developed countries, governments had pre-purchased supplies of vaccines from leading pharmaceutical companies such as Pfizer and Moderna, assuming that their research would yield good results. Turns out that they were hopefully right, knock on wood, so far so good. So from there on out, we were looking at some authorization.
On December 21st, which is my birthday, very important day in history.
A special day, indeed.
Special, special day. Because on that day, not only did I turn 20, but the EU authorized the Pfizer biotech vaccine for use. And on the 23rd, Canada approved the Moderna vaccine. Currently, there are 64 vaccine candidates that researchers are testing on humans, with 20 in their final stages and 3 being approved for use. So now, after all of that research, the day has finally come. December 14th, what CTV dubbed the V-Day, was the first time COVID vaccines were injected into Canadians from Ontario and Quebec, specifically a small group of prioritized folks after the Pfizer vaccine touched down on Canadian soil the night before. In fact, the first Pfizer vaccine injection occurred in Quebec, administered to an 89-year-old woman in a long-term care facility. According to CTV, 14 sites across the 10 provinces will be receiving Canada's initial 30,000 doses as the country's largest and most logistically complex immunization campaign kicked off after V-Day. Canada's vaccine shipments will continue to arrive in stages beginning at 30,000, additional vaccines coming in on the week of December 21st. The top military general who is leading the rollout from the Public Health Agency of Canada, Major General Danny Fortin, said on December 14th that, quote, between now and the end of this month, we can have up to 219,000 additional doses, unquote.
So as of now, that was earlier in the month, as of now, according to the National Post, the Canadian government expects 4 million doses of Pfizer's vaccine to be available to citizens between now and the end of March, with an additional 2 million doses of Moderna's vaccine set to roll out in tandem. Both vaccines require 2 doses, so very quick math here, 3 million Canadians could be fully immunized against the virus by the end of March. However, also keep in mind that these 3 million Canadians are those who are prioritized by government standards. That means healthcare workers and senior citizens. This means that Canadians will have to wait until April at the earliest before the vaccine is available on a more widespread basis, according to the National Post. It will be around fall 2021 before all Canadians who want a vaccine can get it. Canada's estimate is that 8% of Canadians will be vaccinated in the first quarter of the year.
Now that we've kind of gone through the process of the vaccine thus far, why don't we now debunk some of the myths that are coming out about the vaccine and the misconceptions overall? So when the rise of social media first began, we saw this epidemic of misinformation, and this is way before COVID. This is, you know, early days of Instagram and all that jazz. However, as social media gained its popularity as well as established itself as a go-to source for updates on current events, I'm specifically talking about Facebook and Twitter, we now see that there's misinformation everywhere about everything. So whether it be presidential campaigns or just science in general, people are relying on unreliable sources to further their political agendas. So before we delve into this new movement of anti-vaxxer politics, let's first debunk some of the myths being spread about the vaccine. We will be referencing the Mayo Clinic's Q&A regarding these myths.
So the first myth is that we'll start by addressing the common concern that the vaccine isn't safe due to the short time frame in which it was developed. So the reason for this short time frame is because of, obviously, I hope we all know the severity of the worldwide effects of this pandemic. Therefore, there was a priority for a vaccine more so than ever before. I can almost confirm that every developed Western country and every large pharmaceutical company was working on a vaccine candidate of sorts. Mm-hmm. However, this prioritization did not forego necessary or standard safety protocols. There were still trial clinics. We talked a lot about the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines a couple of minutes ago and all of those phases. The Pfizer vaccine has been FDA approved, which is not an easy thing to achieve. Fun fact, the Jewel has yet to be approved by the FDA. That is right. the jewel that I can guarantee you probably one in three of your friends have. If we can normalize jeweling, we can normalize the vaccine. And for peace of mind, the Center of Disease Control and Prevention and the FDA will continue to closely examine the vaccine process.
Another common misconception is that one does not need the vaccine if one has already been infected with the virus, as it grants some sort of immunity. Unfortunately, although it would be convenient, there is not enough evidence that ensures that once one has contracted the virus, they are protected from recontracting virus or transmitting the virus to others. According to the Mayo Clinic, there is such thing as natural immunity when it comes to COVID. However, it may not last long. For those who don't know, natural immunity is when one contracts a virus and builds an immunity to it through dealing with it and overcoming it. However, the Mayo Clinic, quote, recommends getting the COVID-19 vaccine even if you've had COVID-19 previously. Although those who've had COVID-19 should delay vaccination until about 90 days from diagnosis, people should not get vaccinated if in quarantine after exposure or if they're having COVID-19 symptoms, unquote.
So the next myth that we have is the vaccine has severe side effects. Thus far, as vaccines around the world are being rolled out, for COVID-19, mild to moderate reactions have been reported. However, no lasting impacts or injuries have been recorded, as stated by the Mayo Clinic, quote, the early phase studies of the Pfizer vaccine show that it is safe. About 15% of people developed short-lived symptoms at the site of the injection, half developed systemic reactions, primarily headaches, chills, fatigue, or muscle pain, or fever, lasting a day or two, unquote. And a reminder, any vaccine can cause side effects. It is a response from your immune system. This is what happens when you get your annual flu shot, like I did a month ago. They're injecting a touch of the flu into your body so that your body can develop antibodies to learn how to fight it.
So the next one is, I don't need a mask after I'm vaccinated. So firstly, as we talked about just a few moments ago, we're not all going to be vaccinated at the same time, unfortunately. So as the vaccines are being rolled out, you want to keep your mask on in public spaces, as there isn't enough information currently on how long or if one can carry as well as transmit the virus post-vaccination. As suggested by the Mayo Clinic, quote, until more is understood about how well the vaccine works, continuing with precautions such as mask wearing, physical distancing, and washing hands frequently will be important, unquote.
Okay, so the next myth that we've seen, the vaccine is more deadly than the virus. So this is a personal favorite. As stated by the Mayo Clinic, quote, there is a claim circulating on social media that COVID-19's mortality rate is 1% to 2% and that people should not be vaccinated against a virus with such a high survival rate. However, a 1% mortality rate is 10 times more lethal than the seasonal flu. In addition, mortality rates can vary widely and are influenced by age, sex, and underlying health conditions, unquote. So just a general note, I feel like we should all be weary of believing statistics in general on social media. You don't know where those are coming from. You don't know if they're real, if they're fake. You don't know what population they're about. That's largely true. Like, they don't include all of the fine lines, like all the fine print under, right? So maybe just practice caution when seeing statistics as such.
So another personal favorite of the shows is the vaccine is a way for the government to control and microchip people's brains. So first, I'm going to just address the origin of this myth. According to the Mayo Clinic, this myth began after certain comments were made by Bill Gates from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation regarding a digital certificate of vaccine records. So the technology in question during this discussion is not a microchip and has yet to be implemented, nor does it have any relation to the COVID-19 vaccine or testing. For clarity, the digital certificate of vaccine records is exactly as it sounds. It's a digitized filing system of some sorts that allows certain authorized persons to see who has received all their vaccinations. The idea here is that those with all their vaccinations are allowed to travel, work, participate in large group events like concerts. Once again, this is not a reality nor tied to COVID-19. Therefore, there is no microchip in the vaccine. Also, just a personal note and reminder, if you're on social media, use a credit card, use Face ID to unlock your iPhone, have a social insurance number, you are trackable and the government does not need to microchip you to access your information. To learn more, look up Mark Zuckerberg.
Period. We live in the age of surveillance capitalism, yeah. Guys. If you're so pressed about the vaccine, then like consider being pressed about other things as well.
Yeah.
The vaccine will alter my DNA is another myth that we've seen. To quote the Mayo Clinic, the first COVID-19 vaccines to reach the market are likely to be messenger RNA vaccines or mRNA. According to the CDC, mRNA vaccines work by instructing cells in the body how to make a protein that triggers an immune response. Injecting mRNA into your body will not interact or do anything to the DNA of your cells. Human cells break down and get rid of the mRNA soon after they have finished using the instructions, unquote. DNA is slightly malleable. It can be changed by things like even drinking coffee or drinking alcohol, but it's not going to change from a vaccine, you know? Remember when coming across bold claims about the virus, specifically when it comes to science, just do your research. I feel like that's just the main takeaway of this segment. There is a lot of accessible research online regarding the vaccine and myths surrounding it. If you're really that interested, the New York Times has a coronavirus tracker, vaccine tracker website that looks at all the science behind all of the vaccine candidates. The Pfizer article that we mentioned earlier talked all about the Pfizer COVID vaccine's science behind it.
And lastly, the vaccine was developed with fetal tissue. Because the COVID-19 vaccine is a mRNA vaccine, it does not require or use fetal tissue. The show personally does not mind if there is stem cell research from fetal tissue that comes from abortions, but if any family member or acquaintance uses that as an argument to avoid getting the vaccine, you can easily debunk such a statement. Overall, we hope that debunking these myths is helpful and sets up some context for the bigger picture, which we'll be exploring in just a moment.
Recently, I saw a nurse post a video on Instagram discouraging his viewers from getting the novel COVID-19 vaccine. His advocacy was not medical. Rather, he believed that the government was conspiring a great reset against the public, specifically that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines were kind of these sedative potions to keep our minds just blank as big corporations and governments and big farms spun this kind of wicked web of dictatorship and authoritarianism under our noses. And in the age of conspiracy theories, I was not surprised to hear yet another of these kind of anti-government shouts into the abyss in the wake of measures that will undoubtedly offend somebody in regards to their rights and freedoms. However, I was shocked to hear it come so proudly from the mouth of a healthcare professional. The best part was that he was wearing scrubs and a stethoscope in the video. So like, as if that kind of proved his competency. As soon as I viewed this clip, I began seeing anti-vax rhetoric pop up everywhere, actually. The second any sort of vaccine news came up, it seemed like someone on social media needed to warn the public or their audience about the grave dangers of what medicine and malicious intentions of big pharma. I found it was especially strange because it was the first time for me to have anti-vax propaganda basically on my timeline. I don't often engage with that kind of content, and all of a sudden it's popping up. Also, I've never really thought of it as something that was politicized. I always thought it was just kind of associated with Berkeley, California and veganism. So when did it become politically affiliated, I question. I mean, I know that the timelines and the measures taken to tackle the pandemic have obviously ruffled the feathers of a lot of North America's Republican Party, even the alt-right, things like wearing masks and social distancing and not being able to get your hair done, I guess, apparently hinders somebody's first rights in the First Amendment. It became a forthcoming reality. Anti-vaxxers and alt-right supporters found more common ground than they had already.
So to, you know, fully get the whole picture, I think we're going to start with the OG anti-vaxxers. The, you know, where did this all start from? Where did this idea that vaccination was bad for you, you shouldn't get vaccinated, where did it start? So basically, there was this physician in the late 1990s named Andrew Wakefield, and he worked at the Royal Free Hospital in London. He published an article claiming to have found the explanation for autism in the measles virus. Apparently, non-autistic developing children manifested autistic symptoms shortly after administration of the MMR, which is measles, mumps, rubella, triad vaccine. He basically said that this vaccine upsets upsets your intestinal lining, causing inflammation, thus causing autism. I'm not really sure how that works, but okay. Don't really buy it, but sure, Wakefield.
That's the gist.
Then in 2005, an investigative reporter alerted the journal's editors that Wakefield's study had been flawed by severe research misconduct, conflicts of interest, and probably falsehood in general. After investigating the matter, The Lancet retracted the article, and the British Medical Association took disciplinary actions against Wakefield. However, despite this, you know, discredit of his work and him as a healthcare practitioner, the link between MMR vaccine and autism remained in the public's consciousness and became reduced to rather vaccinations in general equate to autism.
So since the 1990s, this movement has progressed, but I'd like to say largely the research behind what the anti-vaccine ideology has become more grounded. Here's a quote from a McGill article. The central dogma of the anti-vaccine ideology is that vaccines cause autism and other bad health effects, and that governments and the pharmaceutical industry knowingly suppress this information. This tenet, we easily imagine, is tightly wedded to the political left. It's a hippy-dippy attitude, we often think, born out of an irrational fear of chemicals, and there are indeed prominent spokespeople for the movement who fit the sketch, unquote. So the leftist branch, and rather OG branch of the ideology, basically believes nature is the ultimate healer. However, it gets problematic when people then conversely frame pharmaceutical companies as in pursuit of impurity or artificial medicine, trying to trick us into poisoning our body. Often this branch also aligns with what's called the natural immunity theory, which believes that barriers to germs, like washing your hands or using a mask, actually weakens your naturally strong immune system.
So the big question remains, why did the shift between crunchy granola folks to alt-right politics take place, and how did it take place? Well, now we're going to talk about Facebook, indoctrination, and Trump's party.
So I think that it's necessary to acknowledge kind of the dark shift that social media has taken. I read this book by Christopher Wiley, who was one of the founders of Cambridge Analytica. The Facebook Cambridge Analytica data scandal was basically an incident where millions of Facebook users' personal data was acquired without the individual's consent by Cambridge Analytica, predominantly to be used for political advertising. And it was claimed to be the largest known leak in Facebook history at the time. But basically, Facebook sold its consumers' data that it was collecting without the consumer's knowledge. And Cambridge Analytica, which is a political consulting firm, sold this data and used it to propagandize Facebook users into swaying their opinions on the US election. And that's why a lot of people say that the US election was tampered with. It was. And this is why Mark Zuckerberg actually went to court later on, and Cambridge Analytica got in a lot of trouble. It just really wasn't good. And I feel like this is one of the things that we really need to touch on, the fact that Facebook collects your data so that you can be susceptible to things that are larger than yourself. You know, it's not about what products you want to buy. It's about who you're voting for to control your country. So with that said, Facebook definitely makes us more susceptible to radicalization, specifically in regards to right-wing politics, especially when one considers how much they share and discuss on the platform and how much Facebook can take from you as a person unwittingly.
Mm-hmm. So let's consider Facebook groups as an example that are a place to converse, share tips and information regarding whatever piques your interest. So when I was researching how Facebook plays a role in this, I guess, shaping of our political ideals and our political identities, there was a strong example for parenting Facebook groups, especially in regards to vaccinations. Users can share memes or information that contains misleading facts or tips or even reports regarding the pandemic. The more that one interacts with this type of content, the more one's algorithm is altered to show this sort of misleading and anti-vaxxer sentiment. These online anti-vaxxer groups have actually changed their tone from concerns of wholesome ingredients and living naturally to accusing the government of violating their rights and freedoms and, you know, microchipping the masses. So with the pandemic, the anti-vaxxer movement, with the assistance of, I suppose, social media helping the spread of this propaganda, the movement has reached new heights with the denials of scientific evidence. This is also supported by the Trump administration. So you can see all these paths where this essentially just all these falsehoods are being validated. They're being validated through the spread of propaganda, and they're being validated by political parties. Additionally, the anti-vaxxer stance has impeded on unrelated areas such as mask wearing, socially distancing, and overall, you know, obeying COVID guidelines. It's no longer about anti-vaccination. It's about denying or not caring about the virus itself.
So now let's move on to lawmaking and vaccinations and anti-science sentiment. It's a large jump from anti-vax to anti-science, but you best believe it's happening. Now that we've examined these covert tools of indoctrination, as Amy so eloquently put it, I want to focus on the role of identity politics. My favorite thing as a psych major, I love this stuff. So a 2017 study published in the journal Natural Human Behavior, written by Sayed Omer, a Yale University epidemiologist and infectious disease specialist, found that people who were skeptical of vaccines tended to list purity and liberty as important values. To quote Omer, purity overlaps substantially with the crunchy granola crowd. The left interpretation of liberty is human rights and the right is libertarianism, unquote. Also, Devin Burkhart, who is the executive director of the anti-white nationalism think tank, the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights, observed that the presidency of Trump came with the rise of right-wing extremism, also populism, arguing that, quote, if there was really one thing to point to the to that was a transformative movement, it was Trump's flirtation with anti-vax messaging that signaled to the MAGA base that this was something to be concerned about, unquote.
Yeah, so Trump has made, you know, many statements associating vaccinations with autism, and the administration in general has, you know, been promoting this ever-increasing anti-science stance. So you sort of have these people that are gathering this sort of thinking via misinformation online, and they're being validated by a political party, something that's supposed to represent authority and just legitimacy in general.
And putting your trust in people.
Yeah, you see these people that are supposed to be in charge validating falsehoods. You know, the idea of truth is subjective now. The idea of fact is subjective, clearly, because anyone can say anything, and I guess it takes a certain amount of people to agree for it to become fact. And with the rise of anti-vax, we have this a continuous degradation of science built upon. Right-wing politicians take advantage of this mistrust in what we consider fact. And this disbelief in factual information to push their own agendas in office.
Yeah, so in 2017, a group of Republican state representatives in Texas named the Freedom Caucus attempted to prohibit the state's effort to record and track the amount of parents seeking to exempt their children from school vaccinations. We're about to get crazy here, guys. The caucus passed a bill that prevented children in foster care from receiving vaccinations until their biological parents consented. According to a group of researchers from Drexel University in Pennsylvania in 2018, after reviewing 175 of proposed pieces of legislation regarding states' vaccination exemption laws, such as the ones I mentioned earlier, Republican lawmakers are more likely to support and develop this kind of legislation. And this isn't to say that the leftist granola folks aren't still around, of course, but instead to show how Republican parties capitalize off of the newfound support for an older movement, further solidifying this association of right-wing politics, anti-vaxxers, and the concept of freedom. It's like the left, and regardly like more left sentiments, can be created. Not saying that they can always be right or anything, but they can be created with traditional what are considered leftist ideals, but yeah. It can easily be hijacked to further anybody's agenda, right?
And lastly, we want to talk about conspiracy theories and anti-Semitism in the wake of the pandemic. Uh-huh. So one of the theories that is quite popular in regards to the vaccine is titled the Plandemic. In short, there's a person, yes, Wow, play on words. In short, there was this person that uploaded a video to YouTube claiming that global elites such as Bill Gates and Dr. Anthony Fauci are using COVID to maintain and acquire more power in the world. This person, whose name is not listed in any of the research I've done, argues her research on this theory has been buried by Dr. Fauci, who is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. This woman argues that this virus is really a scheme for money-making run by the elites, and the video supports and credits the discredited scientist, Dr. Judy Mikovits. This conspiracy, like many, is rooted in anti-Semitism, a common and popular belief shared amongst alt-right followers. Oftentimes, conspiracy theorists rely on this anti-Semitic trope of the manipulating controller to push their outlandish claims. Consider Pizzagate as another example. Also, in relying on these tropes, people are normalizing anti-Semitism.
As stated by the Office of HM Government's Independent Advisor on Anti-Semitism, quote, "The association between infectious diseases and anti-Semitism has a long and deep-rooted history. Evidence of the merging of these themes emerged during the bubonic plague in the mid-14th century. Mm-hmm. As the Black Death swept through Europe in many places, Jews were blamed for causing the plague through their alleged poisoning of wells. Thousands of Jews were expelled, put on trial, tortured, and even killed during this period for non-existent crimes. The scale of persecution was so vast that Western Europe largely became devoid of Jews, with many traveling to the East. This theme reemerged in the 20th century, where Adolf Hitler compared Jews to harmful bacillus and referred to them as viruses. These sentiments were echoed in Nazi propaganda, perhaps most famously in the film Der Ewig Jude, where Jews were depicted as rats spreading infections across Europe. These anti-Semitic tropes are regularly spread by conspiracy theorists and anti-Semites today, and this forms the basis of our report," unquote. And another ADL report found that anti-Semitic incidents have increased by 12% over the past year. To quote this report, "The audit found there were, on average, as many as 6 anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S. for each day in the calendar year. That's the highest level of anti-Semitic activity ever recorded by ADL," unquote. As things that, like, as conspiracy theories kind of take hold on certain political affiliates, you have to wonder where their motives lie, whether you're an anti-vaxxer who truly believes that, like, kale will save you, or whether, like, it actually comes down to something like something as terrible as anti-Semitism.
Be critical of the news in which you consume and the things online that you consume. Are there covert anti-Semitic stereotypes? Is there just blatant misinformation? So be wary of the media that you consume. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. We cannot go through our resource list, but we have a bunch of informative sources for you guys.
Search for Unfit to Print on Instagram and on Twitter. We have a full Google Doc there. We've got some stuff about vaccine trackers. We've got some scientific information. We've got dispelling myths. We've got articles on anti-Semitism. We've got articles on anti-vaxxers. It's basically everything we use to write this audio essay. So go check that out.
Thank you. That's all for today, folks. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in this week for a new year of Unfit. Much appreciated. Come back next week at the same time for another show. Playing us out, we have some throwback tunes, some Canadian throwback tunes, may I just add.
That's kind.
Start with Cresha Turner with Don't Call Me Baby, followed by Man I Used to Be by Coast. So enjoy.
Stop begging, can't you see I've run out of life? Stop showing up at my favorite restaurant. Dropping by my work, saying you just wanna talk. Don't call me baby. Don't call me baby anymore.
tried it, I couldn't fight it. Now I just wanna get back to me. Oh baby, ooh, back into the man I used to be. I tried it, I couldn't fight it. Now I just wanna get back to me. Oh baby, ooh, ooh, ooh. Back into the man I used to be.
Things that I said I wouldn't do, I did them. Secrets below the surface, the truth, I hit them. As mankind has passed, I couldn't erase the tears of a million years, this human race of animals that talk and walk upright. The slave all day and fall into trance at night. Growing the planet, trying to find missing links like the men we used to be and are we supposed to think? Mysteries, maybe not. It's getting hot, we better configure the plot. But I hold a pen with the grip so tight that I squeeze the ink down to the page and write a song for the people. Came up from the underground, now I ride above on a hovercraft for sound. This microphone like an amphetamine, keeping me clean, speaking in dreams so nature can intervene. It's all received.
I tried it, I couldn't fight it. Now I just wanna get back to me. Oh baby, ooh, back into the man I used to be.
Or promote bilingualism in Canada? Look no further. Apply for the Odyssey or Explore program for the chance to improve your French or help young people improve their English. You'll immerse yourself in another region's language and culture, make new friends, and have experiences that will stay with you forever. Many people say the Odyssey and Explore programs have changed their lives. To find out more or to apply, visit englishfrench.ca. Programs funded by the Government of Canada.
Berkati guruka arena mani ninama inu tumilanga mani tilungi
hai hani pisutiyunga ulume January 5, 2021 amma nipigumutunga sobeche eprome nilala opsimajune Allo Babuskas, Okale Mahatara, Mama Louis Desotime, Isumale Rede, Niahole Rede, Ekajoteman, no one knowing an it, no one to Aral 19, Taco Towning an it. Amalo in a titor to Nitot in it to Sahatalang on Major Sea. So Nala Twin Narati. I'm Annie Pisote. Today, January 5. 2021, Amma, welcome to Nipibut. Today we will replay an interview from April when Agluba Puskas spoke to Louis Desoutine, psychologist and psychotherapist, about mental well-being during COVID-19. We will also play some music, Inutitut, so keep on listening.